Hello, this is Helpfully Yours, a podcast devoted to sharing and discussing stories of helping. I'm your host, Dr. Holly Howitt. Hi, welcome to another episode of the Helpfully Yours podcast. So the last Monday of the month is always a compilation episode. And so today's episode will feature four interviews. So if you missed one of the earlier May episodes, or you just want to hear all of them again, take a listen to this extended episode. I will provide a brief introduction to all of the people I interviewed here, and then we'll play the episodes one right after the other. Thanks for listening. So first up is Cabrina Bland. Cabrina is a navigation coordinator at Beacon Community Connections. She's been with Beacon for almost a year, but that is not our first time working together. Cabrina was working for 232 Help during the Beacon project and helped make that pilot project a success. Cabrina's passion for helping people is evident in everything she does. Cabrina is active in her congregation, Destiny of Faith, where she sings and participates in various aspects of worship. I'm so proud to introduce you all to Cabrina. Next, we have Dr. Ryan Cazares. Ryan is a therapeutic optometrist and the owner of the Scott Eye Care Clinic. He is an active civic leader in the community of Lafayette, Louisiana. Ryan is the founder of the Musical Instrument Library, which is a nonprofit organization that supports our local public library with a variety of musical instruments that can be checked out just like a book. I met Ryan through our community's leadership development program, Leadership Lafayette. And a big part of Ryan's life is music. He is a singer and guitarist for the band Dr. C and the Gree Gree. And Ryan also has two adorable dogs, Lex and Pierre. Our third interview is with Mary Bergeron. Mary is the advancement officer for the Hospice of Acadiana Foundation. Mary has worked there for almost 7 years in several capacities, always making patients, their families, and community members feel welcome. Before that, Mary worked at the Catholic Diocese of Lafayette for 15 years. Mary also helps facilitate monthly MACRA meetings, which provide resources and support for veterans and their families. Mary is one of the kindest and friendliest people I know. She was instrumental in opening Beacon's first offices within the Hospice of Acadiana campus. And our final interview of May was with Pauline Breaux. Pauline is the Senior Services Program Manager, as well as the Healthy Aging Initiative Manager at Our Lady of Lourdes Regional Medical Center. Pauline has been a registered nurse for 42 years, all of them at Lourdes. Nothing and no one can stop Pauline when she is on a mission to help someone. In 2016, Pauline formed the Acadiana Health Coalition, which brings together healthcare organizations across the care continuum for healthy patient outcomes. Pauline also serves as a board member on the Beacon Community Connections Board of Directors. Let's get to all these great interviews. Welcome, Cabrina, to the Helpfully Yours podcast. I'm so glad that you're here today.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm so happy to be here as well.
All right. Well, I'm really curious about your stories, so let's get started. The first question that I like to ask is, tell me about a time when you helped someone?
A time when I helped someone, I would say that I would talk about the time I donated a kidney. I donated a kidney to my husband in July of 2022. So it's almost a year now, and he's healthy and living, which is a great thing.
Yeah. You know, interesting is like when that happened, you were just starting at Beacon.
Yes.
And so it was kind of from an outsider looking in, it was a whirlwind of like new job, you know, big surgery for both of you and, you know, just kind of life changing. So, kind of tell me about what you were thinking and feeling and doing like during that time, almost a year ago.
Absolutely. So yes, it was a lot going on at once during that time, starting a new job, preparing for that. And, you know, you when you commit to donating a kidney, I don't know if people know this, it's not just like one appointment and done. Like, it's a process to get to the point where you actually can donate, and it can be stopped. It could be canceled, because it was canceled once before because it was supposed to happen the previous year. But of course, I was anxious. I had a little bit of fear, you know, but the goal was to allow my husband, who's receiving the donation, to have a fruitful life, have a full life, and free of machines and free of dialysis. So, you know, all of that stuff, I didn't really care about all the other stuff, you know, as long as he was where he needed to be health-wise. So that was an awesome part. And the miraculous part about it is that he didn't even know I was testing to be a match, to be a donor. And he fought me for a long time about why I shouldn't even consider it or why I shouldn't do it. And he doesn't want me to have surgery and all this, you know, and I'm just like, yeah, I hear all that. And I weighed all of it out, but whatever, I'm doing it. And, you know, he still wasn't with it. So I actually scheduled time to go and get my blood drawn and everything, and tested, not thinking I would be a match. You know, I just did it and was hopeful that it would work. And if it didn't, you know, we'll figure something out. And it came back to me that I was a match. And I told him, and this was maybe a week or two after I had to sneak to the doctor's office to do all of this. But, you know, he had no idea. And when I came home, he was just like, why would you do, you know, he was grateful, of course, but he was kind of just like, why are you doing this? You know, I don't understand why you're doing this, you know. But at the same time, I had to like starve the fearful part of me. And of course, I overthought every outcome, every health outcome, everything that would come up the road. You know, I considered all of those things and talked to the doctor and everything like that. But I just took a chance and I stepped out on faith, because it was something that it wasn't about me in that moment, you know, and I knew that God was going to do what he always does, and that's take care of me. And at this point, he's going to take care of me and my husband. You know what I'm saying? I don't need both my kids, obviously, if you have the opportunity to donate. So that was, you know, that was great. And it was a real turning point for the both of us.
Well, I didn't know. I didn't know all of that backstory. I mean, obviously, I knew that you had donated a kidney, and, you know, I was, you know, around during the process, right up to, you know, the surgery. But I didn't realize that Larry did not know that you were being tested, and actually really didn't want you to be tested. So and you mentioned your faith. Do you attribute like most of you even just considering getting tested and then following through with that as part of your faith journey, or kind of walk me through a little bit more details about like that decision-making process?
Yeah, absolutely. So I definitely attribute to my faith walk, but ultimately I was extremely fearful. Like, I was extremely fearful, but I never vocalized those things. But people who know me personally, they knew my struggles with it. I think that watching the health challenges that my husband walked through, and I don't know what the newlywed age is, but we were only married for about maybe a little over a year, if that, before we found out he was going to be on dialysis. So it was kind of like, you know, in your head, you have all these plans and you're going to go, you're going to live your life and be married, and it's going to be all peachy. You know what I'm saying? And even though you know for a fact that marriage is not all roses, but at the same time, you know, it was tough because it was early on in our marriage and we had started dealing with these things. And I'm like, okay, we can't, live like this. It was tough, you know, it was hard. So, you know, there are some decisions that we have to make. And if this is the decision that we have to make for us to live full lives and have a great life together, then we have to get you together, meaning Larry, you know what I'm saying? And during that time, I was praying for healing for him but clarity almost, because I didn't want to just do it just because I felt like, oh, I want him to have this kidney and whatever. There was time for me praying and listening to God to have an answer as to, is this what you really want to do? You know, I'm Dr. Google. Okay. So
we all are at some point. So, I mean, you know, we all succumb to that. That's
right. Some point or another. It was just, I was reading everything that could go terribly wrong, but I also was thinking about everything that could go terribly right. You know what I'm saying? Because it was about getting him where he needed to be, and nobody else saw the journey behind doors, you know? So I was continually praying and seeking answers as to what, you know, what the next steps would be. And the answer was just have faith, because I'm going to be taken care of regardless of the outcome of this, you know? And because of what I think being so close to it and being faced with something that this is something I've never even thought I'd be a part of, and being so close to it, I think I had my answer from the beginning. It was just a matter of me having faith to make the decisions. Does that make sense?
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
Yes.
And I think that's why you use the word journey a lot. And I think that, I think that's really illustrative of the whole decision-making process.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to switch now and talk about a time when someone helped you.
That makes me think back to when I was an undergrad at UL in 2015. So I was in my last semester of undergrad, and I was at my internship. My internship was at Casa of St. Landry in Opelousas. And one morning I got to my internship and the person who I would normally answer to there wasn't there at the time. So it was just maybe like 30 to 45 minutes where it was just me and the executive director, Madeline Rosette. And she was in her office and I just went in to say good morning. And we kind of just started talking and having, you know, just general conversation. And, you know, we shared some things with one another, and at the moment we were kind of just talking about life, and she was asking me about family and different things like that. And, you know, in that moment, she didn't realize how much I was struggling. Like, I was worried about, I was getting ready to graduate within the next month or two, but I had that, I was anxious about what was happening next. I'm like, am I going to get a job? Am I going to go to grad school? Now I'm about to be an adult and I'm about to have real bills. Like, this is not, what's up. Like, I was happy, but I wasn't looking forward to it, because this was a point in my life where something was about to come to an end and there was no rewind. I mean, I can't fail on purpose to not move forward. You know what I'm saying? That was just not an option. I was kind of just struggling with what to do next. And, you know, she had no idea how much fear and anxiety I had in that moment. And we were kind of just talking. And at the end of the conversation, you know, I'm leaving her office and she gives me $100 bill. And in that, like, I'm sure she didn't know what I was going to do with the money. She didn't care what I was going to do with the money. You know, and we had the, you know, the exchange where it's like, oh, no, you don't have to do that. No, you got to do this. Oh, no, you don't. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, at some point, it only went on for a second. And she was like, Cabrini, you're going to take this. And I was like, oh, OK. You know, I couldn't, you know, it was no, how long do you go back and forth when somebody is trying to offer you a hand? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I took the money and she didn't realize in that moment, but she was. she was planting a seed for me and, you know, helping me to start a new chapter in my life that I was so afraid of. And I'm forever grateful to her for that, because I left my internship that day and I went to the bank and I opened my first account on my own. And of course, when I left for college, my mom set up an account for both of us. And that's the account that I had used even after I had got a job and everything like that. But this was mine, you know, it was big for me to have an account that was mine. And I started with that $100 seed. And I still have the account today, you know, I still have the account today. And she doesn't realize, even though that was just, you know, a moment, it might have been a small moment for her, but it was very pivotal for me in transitioning from being a college student to an adult. So I'm always going to be grateful for her, for the impact that she made.
That is, that's like a really fantastic story about someone just being there in the right place in the right time. Yeah. And giving you something. And she, I'd love to talk to her. She may not realize like what a deep and lasting impact that just talking to you, and then two, just, you know, giving you a little bit of financial support, that really you took that and just ran with it and used that as just a milestone to move on to the next stage in your life.
Yes.
So that's, I love that, and how that really set you on a journey.
Yes, it definitely did. It definitely did. And to this day, like we still, when we see each other, she's always speaking life and encouraging me. Like that's her nature. That's her personality. And that's always how she's been with me. And she's never wavered on that. So that's why I always attribute this, like this moment of her helping me. Like I always bring it back to the forefront. And I've told her this story, but I think when I told her this story, it was among a bunch of other people. So I think it might've been years later that she actually knew about this, but she's always been a life speaker, and I appreciate her for that.
I think that's really interesting. I know that you've had several mentors in your life. I mean, obviously Madeline has turned into one, and Mona Gobert Cravens is she's a person I look up to, and I know that you look up to her too. How would you, you know, when thinking about you know, whether you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, I'm in my 50s now, and I still look for mentors. How would you, you know, characterize the importance of having a mentor in your life?
I think the most, and I think I would have 2 points to that, because two of the most important things I believe as far as a mentor, the correction that they provide, and the ability for me to receive the correction. You want to be, as a leader, you want to be teachable. Of course, you want to lead people and you want to influence and everything, but you want to be teachable. And I always, for both Madeline and Mona, both, they were always willing to correct me. But when they corrected me, it was in love. It was like, okay, you know, you're falling short in this area, but let me show you, let me guide you on how to do it. You know, they never just let me do things all willy-nilly. You know, it was almost like, you know, just a Band-Aid. Let me fix you up. Because the next time you do this, you need to make sure it's right. You know, the next time you present this, you want to make sure it's right. And a mentor always challenges you to walk in excellence, you know, and I always strive to be my best self. And of course, it's going to, you know, you don't always meet the mark and you fall short. All of that is fine. But at the same time, they've always challenged me for excellence. So I hold myself to the same standard. And like we've been talking over the last couple of weeks, you and I and the staff have been talking about perfection and imperfection and all of that. But I think that operating in excellence and operating in perfection are two different things. Mm-hmm. And I think the importance of having a mentor pushes more towards operating in excellence and giving your best rather than it's always perfect, it's always peachy, it's always rosy. And that's not the case.
Yeah, I love that phrase that you had, operating in excellence, because I do, you know, we have been talking about that. So at Beacon right now, we're doing a book study on The Gifts of Imperfection by Brené Brown, which I highly recommend to anyone. But I do think, you know, a counteracting of that is like, how can I grow or how can I do better? How can I reach for excellence and not perfection? One more point I want to make before we wrap up is I want to go back to your first story about, you know, your process for deciding to get tested and then, you know, all the decisions that you made along the way to actually go through with the surgery, you know, and be an organ donor. You know, when we think about decision making, a lot of times we just think about the logical stuff, yes. You know, but that's not really what happens when we make decisions. Yes, there's some logic to it, some research, some things like that, but also emotions. And I also think, and I'm pretty sure you would agree that, you know, your spirituality, whatever your faith happens to be, also comes into play. So I'd like to get, you know, your thoughts about decision-making just in general. And then, you know, if you have any more thoughts about how all those things came into play when you were making that very large decision.
In decision-making, you do have to consider both sides. You know, you do have to consider, like you said, not only the logical side, but the spiritual side. Things are always going to come up and you do need to weigh out the pros and cons. I wouldn't advise anybody to just, oh, this looks good, but everything behind it doesn't back it up. It doesn't look like, you know, it's just a fly by night thing. The wind blows, you go this way. The wind blows, you go that way. And that's not always best when making a decision. And of course you take risk and you understand what could come with that risk, but at the same time, there has to be some logic. But as far as the spiritual side, my decisions ultimately, for my faith, my decisions ultimately have to glorify God. You know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. I cannot, if my decision or if my lifestyle or anything that I put my hands to don't glorify him, that's not something that I necessarily should be doing. So I'm always seek wise counsel through prayer and through, you know, people who I'm closest to, because at the end of the day, I can't do any of this by myself. And none of the things that have come to me, none of the opportunities that have come to me are by happenstance. They're all supposed to happen. And what's for me is for me. And I'll ultimately obtain it because that's how it should be. That's how it's supposed to go. So, but I definitely consider both logic and spiritual counsel when making decisions. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. And I think this is worth talking about because like I said, a lot of times I don't think we really think about how we decide. We just kind of decide, you know, kind of on some things we decide almost on autopilot. Well, I always decide this way, so this is how I'm going to do it. So I really appreciate you talking a lot about your decision with that. And I just want to let anyone know that if you wanted to learn more about organ donation or even consider becoming an organ donator, A great place to get information is at organdonor.gov. That's a federal website that has a lot of information about that, and you're going to get accurate information. So we talked about Dr. Google earlier. This is a site that I would recommend. And are there any other resources, Cabrina, that you could think of off the top of your head, if people are interested in learning more about organ donation?
I actually went on the Ochsner site for their transplant team to find most of the information. I really was kind of just trying to delve into the people who were going to operate on me.
Yes.
And I relied mostly on the information that they provided to me, because I would go down this rabbit hole, to be honest with you.
Yes.
With all of the internet sites. So I went directly to the people who will be operating on me.
So I think that's great. And I will, we'll put a link to both of those websites in the show notes. So Cabrina, thank you so much for sharing your story about your journey, both your journey, like from college student to adult, and then also your more recent journey on becoming a kidney donor. So thank you so much.
Of course. And thank you for having me. I'm always willing and happy to talk about that situation in particular, just because it was so miraculous and it was so awesome that it could possibly happen. And to be living in the outcome of all of those decisions is awesome as well.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks a lot. Welcome, Ryan. I'm so glad that you could join us today.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me today.
All right. Well, Ryan, I've known you, I think, for about 5 years, and have learned a lot about you over that time. So I'm really curious about the stories you're going to tell us today. So why don't we jump right in with you telling me about a time that you helped someone?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing that comes to mind is during the pandemic in 2020, you know, I was watching on social media how a lot of my friends had to close their businesses, and they had to pivot and make some changes so that they could continue to serve their customers. But one that kind of hit me hard was I had a friend who owns a music academy that teaches music lessons to mostly kids, but to people of all ages. And of course, they had to stop giving the lessons, and a lot of kids' parents, due to getting laid off or just budgeting, decided, one of the first things to go is these music lessons. So I don't know, I just had this idea that, maybe we could raise some money and pay for a month's worth of the academy students and, for lessons. And they were able to do them virtually, so not having to be in person, but it was great to have that continuation of the lessons for the students, instead of having to stop and maybe never start again, after the pandemic kind of ran its course. So that was a pretty rewarding thing I did a couple years back.
Yeah, that's like so interesting that that's kind of where you would go to is, kids need music lessons and my friend that provides these is not able to do that. So let me see how I can help. So do you have any idea about like how many kids were able to continue lessons during that time?
Gosh, I really don't remember the number. but basically we kind of figured out, you know, how much it would cost his entire assortment of students who quit or who had to quit, how much it would cost for a month's worth of their lessons. And so I'm not sure how many it was, but you know, it was a considerable amount.
Yeah, I'm sure that it was. And so was that kind of like, tell me a little bit about how you learned how to play the guitar. Was it when you were younger, or did you do that as an adult? I don't know that.
Yeah, so in middle school, I was in band, and I played the trumpet, and you know, it wasn't really for me. And you know, going into high school, I didn't care to join like the band and march and do all the band camp and all that stuff. So my friend had a guitar, and so I was kind of messing around with it, and I thought that it would be fun to pick one up. So I got one for Christmas, and I want to say I was 14 when I started playing. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of taught myself using different methods I looked up online. It wasn't until later on that I took some lessons, but yeah, I pretty much just kind of taught myself how to play.
Do you wish that you'd had lessons like earlier? Like looking back on it now, do you wish that you'd had lessons earlier?
Not necessarily, because I find that, you know, some instructors, and this is not every instructor, but some instructors, you know, when they start teaching a new student, they teach fundamentals that can mm-hmm. sometimes bore the student, like scales and chords.
Yes.
Well, you know, I started out by teaching myself how to play, you know, rock songs, and that's what's fun. And then later, when it came time to improve and learn the theory and the scales and all that, that's when I took lessons. So, so no, I don't really regret that.
Okay. Interesting. And so, I really, for, listeners that may not know, Ryan also is the inspiration behind the MIBRARY, which is the musical instrument library that operates in the Lafayette Parish Public Library system. And so it just seems like access to music is something that is near and dear to your heart. One, because you started that whole thing that's been such a success with the MIBRARY, but then also you just kind of thinking about access to music lessons during the pandemic. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just music has been such an important part of my life. Now, I was a really shy and quiet kid, and so I found it as kind of a way to, you know, a method of release and expression that I didn't necessarily have. And so I figured that, you know, tons and tons of people can benefit from, you know, playing or creating music. So yeah, it's really important to me.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the second question, which is, tell me about a time that someone helped you.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the main thing that comes to mind is, you know, out of optometry school, which I graduated in 2011, I worked for some optometrists for a year, maybe a year and a half. And, you know, it just kind of came to me that, you know, it wasn't cutting it for me. I would rather just start my own clinic. And my hometown of Scott, you know, needed one. We've never had an eye doctor. So I decided, you know, I was going to embark on that journey. But I absolutely could not have done it without my parents. They, you know, as a entrepreneur and a new business owner, you don't necessarily make money for, you know, a year, maybe 2 years. So My parents, you know, let me move back in with them, which was amazing. Helped me save a lot of money. And then they also helped me, you know, just kind of start the clinic whenever, you know, I needed some help, you know, installing things or getting the word out about the clinic and stuff. My parents were always helping me out with that. So it was very, very crucial in the start of my clinic for them to help me out. And yeah, I don't know if I could have done it without their help, for sure.
Yeah. So kind of walk me through, and for those of y'all that don't know, Ryan's clinic, Scott Eye Care, is in Scott, kind of on the main, kind of a main area of Scott, at Cameron and Westgate. Is that right,
Ryan? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And so kind of walk me through, like, how you made the decision to do that. And then what were some of the steps that you took? And if there's any place where your parents kind of intervened, kind of walk me through from you making the decision to, you know, opening your doors and getting your first client.
Yeah. So, I mean, just working for someone, I guess that isn't really in my nature. I always wanted to kind of be my own boss, and I felt like I had gone to school for so long just to work for someone. So I made that decision, and it was tricky. It was very difficult, and required a lot of work, a lot of energy to get started, because I had to plan plan it out, to get someone to map out what the clinic would look like, hire a contractor, and buy equipment, get a loan from the bank, find a place to have the clinic. I mean, it was a lot of work, and from the time I signed the lease to, you know, opening, I mean, it took a good year, just because we had to build things out, and I had to get credential with insurance plans and things like that. So, my parents, you know, helped me out, you know, let me live with them, which, you know, they live just mere minutes from the clinic. And, so that was very helpful. And, my dad being a former cabinet maker, you know, he was able to help me just kind of hang stuff up at the clinic, like the optical displays, and pick up used equipment that I purchased. They were just very instrumental in helping me get it going.
Yeah. And so you didn't buy somebody's existing practice, which I think that's how some people get their own practice, you know, is you buy like a retiring optometrist practice, or, you know, it could be any other, like a dental practice, things like that. But you just started from scratch, and like you said, like finding the office space, planning the office space, which I guess you needed to work with like an architect or something, and then contractors. Did your dad or somebody like kind of help you navigate that? Because, if you're not in that construction world, sometimes you can end up paying more than maybe you should, just because you don't know, where it's possible to save money and where it's not. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I would say it's mostly, you know, it was mostly some fellow eye doctors who, you know, kind of went through the same thing, that were mentors to me. You know, I would run things by them, and they were able to help me make sure I made, you know, good decisions on my purchases and, things like that. So, yeah, I would say, I had a lot of help, not just from my parents, but also some colleagues and mentors as well.
Yeah, I think, and just, you know, my experience starting Beacon is like, you can't do something by yourself, even though like some people think, oh, being an entrepreneur, you're, you know, it's kind of a solo kind of a job. You really do need to surround yourself with people that care about you and believe in you and in your vision. It seems like that's what happened with you in the Scott Eye Care Clinic.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. Surrounding myself with people who have, you know, kind of done the same thing, and people who saw it as a good move on my part. And that's pretty much what I did, surrounding myself with those types of people.
Yeah, so let's kind of talk about, because I touched on it a little bit, but you do have a passion for helping people. You have a lot of passions. You have a passion for eye care. You have a passion for music. And I think you are, I see in you a passion for helping people. Why do you think it's important that people help each other?
Yeah, I just don't think that, you know, we were meant to do this life alone. You know, I think that we all have, hurdles and struggles. And, if I can find it in myself to help someone through something like that, it's only a matter of time when you'll face a struggle or a hurdle, and you'll be thankful for people who reach out and pick you up, you know, when you're down. So I just think it's kind of like human nature, just to help someone, because you never know when you'll need it. Not that I'm expecting, you know, someone to help or anything, but it's good to it's just human nature, I think.
Yeah, and I really like how you said we're not meant to do life alone. I deeply agree with that. I think we're all connected. I do think that helping is part of that not doing life alone kind of a thing. Tell me, what's going on with the library, with the musical instrument library these days? It's still up and operational? Like, what's going on with it?
Yeah, it's still up and operational. It's at the Clifton Chenier Center Library on Willow Street. There's been a little bit of turnover with the librarian, so there hasn't been much activity, I guess you could say, in the past couple of years, but we recently kind of retouched base, and I think they're thinking about moving it to a branch that has a little more foot traffic. The library is a very busy place with a lot of things going on. So, it may be a little while before we get around to that, but it's still up and operational. You can go and if you have a library card, you can check out a guitar, an accordion, a keyboard, a banjo, bass. There's a lot of instruments you can check out. It's still up and running, but, you know, hopefully we'll make a few changes to it pretty soon.
And so you can do this, like, whether you're a kid or an adult, you know, if you've always wanted to try guitar or, like you said, the accordion or something, you can go there. I think around here, the only place that I know that it is in the Lafayette Parish Public Library. Do you know, are there any other of these things kind of either around the state or in other parts of the country?
Yeah, there are musical instrument libraries in other parts of the country. I think we're the only one in the state, last I checked. But there are a few of them, around the country, and they do a lot of good for people who may not have access to instruments, or for people who want to try an instrument out before they, you know, dedicate finances to purchasing one.
I think it's great. And I'm, while I hope there are more, that come into the state, because I think the state does have a deep culture with music. I think I'm glad that Lafayette is the first one to do that. So, Ryan, thank you so much for all the work that you do in our community, and also for being on the Helpfully Yours podcast today.
Yeah, absolutely. That was fun. Glad I could do it.
All right. Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks.
Well, hi, Mary, and welcome to the Helpfully Yours podcast.
Thank you so much, Holly. I am delighted and blessed to be here.
Well, I feel the exact same way. So let's just jump right into the questions. And Mary, tell me about a time that you helped someone.
Well, you know, it's interesting because as I was preparing for this podcast, it brought me back. I tried to recall what was my first experience, you know, outside of the home. Actually, I'm from New Orleans. I'm the third of nine children. So we had chores and duty rosters out of the wazoo, you know, so there was always someone who needed help. But I'm talking about, I tried to recall outside of my, you know, childhood home, when was my first recollection of helping someone? And I thought back to seventh and eighth grade at the school I attended. There was an older lady who was a first grade teacher. And one day she asked me if I could come in and help her open the windows in her classroom. They were big windows and there was no AC back in the school in those days, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm showing my age a little bit. But I would help her. And whenever she would see me, she would say, oh, could you come help me again? And so I began to go every day before school. I did that all through seventh and eighth grade. And I just remember it wasn't a big deal to me, but to her, it was really a big help. So that, I think, was my earliest recollection. And then, of course, much more significantly and impactful, I do remember that that helped me understand, you know, to just be willing to help somebody if they need help. It wasn't, you know, a hard piece for me. And I'm going to jump to 2005. And I'm sure you remember, as you know, all Americans do, the combination of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. And, you know, I was working at the diocese at the time, and having being from New Orleans, my heart was just so broken for all of the people and for the city. And I had a house full. I had 23 people and four dogs in our three-bedroom house. But, you know, from a work perspective, but also from a very personal perspective, I just spent every free moment I could rounding up teams of people and going down into, you know, rural Vermilion Parish and Iberia Parish and those areas. And I'm talking about places that were so hit and there was so much need. And we just went, you know, Holly, we would spend days and hours just digging through the muck. And at the end of a full day's work, you would stop and you would say, we barely made a dent. And so often it felt like thankless work. You know, there was so much need, we couldn't meet it all. And everything we did really didn't seem to make a difference. But we persevered. And I think perseverance is an important piece that we often overlook. So that was a key point for me. And over time, I really had to accept the fact there's a powerlessness in that, you know, of not really being able to resolve an issue. But we were able to make the difference that we were meant to make. And it didn't all have to fall on us. There were others who were going to help in other ways. And we needed to trust that that would come. So many incredible lessons along the way. Although I do recall, you know, there was a lady down, I believe it was in Delcom, and her house had flooded badly. And when we got to her, it was maybe 2 or 3 weeks after the storm. And she was widowed. Holly, she kept the wet furniture in her house because she didn't know you know, what to do from an mm-hmm. insurance perspective or anything like that. And so we went in and just moved it outside onto her patio. She was so nervous. And just to try to reassure her, this was, again, before we had cell phones to take all the pictures, but I had a digital camera. And I went back out to her house after I had gotten home on a Saturday evening. I went back out and I told her, I said, I'm going to take pictures of every piece of your furniture so that you'll have a record. And I printed them quickly at one of the drugstores and went out on the Sunday afternoon and brought her three sets. I said, here you have one set for you, one set for your insurance agent, and you have an extra set just in case you need. And that mm-hmm. was the first time she was able to feel like it was okay to get this moldy mm-hmm. furniture out of her house because yeah. she just didn't know what to do. So, you know, you just, I think of her often every time I drive by there because, you know, bless her heart, she didn't know and she just needed someone to help her. And that's always stuck with me.
Oh, Mary, I think I love the stories that you just told, like from you as, you know, a young middle schooler, you know, with your first recollection of helping all the way to, you know, such a devastating event for Louisiana. I mean, it's just unless you are here when that happened, I think that you can sort of understand from an outsider perspective, but just like being here and seeing all the suffering, you know, and that you just described and feeling like it's just an insurmountable amount of work to be done. And I really loved your, you know, talking about perseverance, and I probably want to come back and talk about that yeah. in just a minute, but let's switch now and tell me about a time when someone helped you.
Well, I'm going to give you two examples here, Holly, because they're the ones that just are on my heart. Several years back, probably close to 10, but I had a family member who was very, very ill for almost a year, and it was just a very trying time for us, you know. And I had a lot on my plate. We had been displaced from our home for a year following a smoke event and just the construction and subcontracting and all of that while working full time was overwhelming. Then we had to travel for my family member to have surgery. We got back just in time for the floods. It was back in 16, actually. We got mm-hmm. back just in time for that. My daughter called in a panic. She was caught in the water. We handled that. You know, it was just one thing after another. And I was not only exhausted, but so overwhelmed from this year of just, you know, so much at once.
Yeah.
And one of my brothers would always call and check on me. I mean, I'm very close with my siblings. I'm so blessed. But he kept calling me. And finally, he called me one day and he said, you know, my family calls me May. He said, you know, May, he said, you need to get help. And I said, oh, really? Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. That does a lot for me. You know, are you kidding? Need help. I'm so far behind, you know, beyond needing help, you know, and I said, thanks. You know, I appreciate what you're saying. Bye. You know, and I kind of cut him off and he called me back and he said, you didn't listen to me. I love you. And I'm telling you, you need to talk to somebody. I said, okay, I'll put it on my list. Thanks. Bye. Hung up on him, you know, and he called mm-hmm. me a third time. He goes, you hung up on me. I said, I don't need to hear what you're saying. And, you know, I think we all get like that. And I had to call him back the next day in tears. And I'm not a crier. But I said, I owe you the biggest apology. You reached out to me in love and I did nothing but resist you. And it pained my heart to know that I had just rejected his attempts to help me. And it taught me so many lessons. Again, I feel like I'm always learning life lessons, you know, yes. But it's so easy for us to be the ones to help others. And it is difficult for us to stop and to say, I am going to receive from someone else. It is mm-hmm. so humbling. And I told him that. I said, you have changed the course of my life because I need to learn from this experience. And I said, I'm going to have to add that to my list, too. And we kind of laughed. But I said, I have to tell you the love that I know you offered that those calls in has, you know, I said, I know your love for me and I know my love for you. I said, I cannot believe that I am so lucky to have a brother who loves me at that depth that you risked three phone calls with me, you know, and I just totally rejected you. I am sorry I did. And I will take your advice under consideration and I will act on it. And I did. And it did help me, you know. So that was one example. The other example is that I have been blessed along the course of my life with great teachers, you know, starting with my parents and my family, but also moving into many different jobs, moving to Lafayette. We moved here in 1990, and that was a difficult time because my dad had died 6 months before we came here. And again, my siblings, my family were all so close, you know, and I felt kind of ripped apart from my family. But I've had great mentors at work. And recently, a very dear friend and mentor of mine passed away. But when I worked for him, one of the things that he did, number one, he had patience with me. But number two, he would tell me things like, you know, today we're just going to meet the miracles along the way. And one time I asked him, we had a tough situation that we were engaged. People had contacted us for help. And it was taking a long time to resolve it. It wasn't ours to resolve. We were just kind of trying to facilitate, you know, the situation. And I asked him one day, I said, how do you do this? How do you deal with despair? Because these people have been calling us with the same situation. They're not vicious. They're handling it very well. They just want it resolved. I feel despair listening to them again on the call this morning because there was no resolution. How do you deal with the darkness? And very simply, and this is what I loved about him, he could answer or guide with the most simple response. He said, that's easy. You just got to look for the light. I'm like, well, that was pretty simple. You know, I should know that. And he said, no, let me explain. He said, do you understand what I'm telling you? I'm like, oh, yes. He goes, no, you don't. Which was funny. But he said, you just have to find the light. You have to look for goodness. He said, and when you see it, you go stand in it and you bring your goodness. He said, because that's how we combat evil. We combat evil with good. And he said, Mary, every day, I want you to look for the light and go bring your goodness to it. Because the more people that bring goodness, you know, the better the world becomes. He said, we can scratch our heads and say, I'm not going to listen to the news and all of that. He said, all you have to do is bring goodness every day. And he said, and you have been blessed and you really owe the world the gift of your goodness. I mean, he schooled me, you know.
That's some very wise advice, and I really appreciate you sharing that. I mean, that's like three little nuggets right there. I mean, I love the idea of meeting miracles along the way.
Isn't that something?
Yeah,
and you know what he told me? He said, Mary B., they're there all the time. We just aren't looking for them. That's true.
You know? That's true. I think so often we get so busy trying to solve
yes.
the problem or the issue that we don't let.
Or be taskmasters, all of them, you know.
Yeah, whether you call it grace or God's will or a miracle. I mean, however you know, right. choose to view these things.
Exactly.
You know, if I firmly believe, like, if you open yourself up to it, you can find it along the way. And then, you know, his idea about finding the light and going and standing in it. That's just, I mean, what a great metaphor for that.
Yeah. And that's as basic as it comes, you know, light and darkness. I mean, we can all kind of understand that. You can think of it from a faith perspective or from a life mm-hmm. perspective, you know?
Oh yeah. And I think sometimes things are so simple that we forget yeah. them.
Yeah. Like you know I what should I mean? Know all, you know, and I always love, cause he would say, you understand what I'm telling you? And I would always say, oh, yes. And half the time I didn't. Holly, when I first worked for him, one time he said, You understand what I'm saying? I said, well, you know, I didn't understand it at first, but now I understand it. He goes, you think I didn't know that? And I mean, we laughed hysterically, but he was very gracious to me. It was wonderful.
What a wise person. And then, you know, what you said of about him, you know, encouraging you to bring your goodness, you know, I always think about, you know, we're blessed to be a blessing.
Right.
The goodness that comes into our life, we're meant to like share that. And I think kind of that to me, that's maybe what he was trying to get at.
Yeah. I'm writing that one down.
I don't, I did not come up with that. I came across that one time. I don't even remember who said that, but it just, it's something that's kind of like stuck with me.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to, because I was really struck by in your first story and then again in your second story, the idea of perseverance when helping. So, you know, you talked about in first grade, when you were in middle school, helping your first, that first grade teacher.
Right.
It wasn't just like, I opened the window for her one time. This was like something that you did for, you know, 2 years, you know, help this person, you know, do something. That is perseverance. And then, you know, even like going back day after day with the Katrina and Rita, you know, survivors that were just trying to just make it. It was tough. I mean, it was a tough time, I think, for everybody, you know, in South Louisiana. But then like flipping it, also your brother
persevered
with you, because you know some people would have just said, I'll call her tomorrow when she's cooled off, or you know, I said my piece and whatever she wants to do with it,
right.
You know,
but the heck with her, exactly,
right? But just the fact that he was able to, you know, persevere, I think really is really interesting. And I like, how do you see like perseverance and helping? What connections would you see between them?
Sometimes it's just getting through a tough day, you know, or sometimes, but I've learned that, you know, I have a stamina and I'm willing to dig deep. You know, I jotted down a few things that I was going to kind of try to tie with that as well, because I think I have some core values that were instilled in me, you know, of course, through my family. Mm-hmm. Things like, you know, I'm not going to ask anyone to do something that I'm not willing to do myself. Listen, I've had my share of jumping out and picking up trash in the parking lot, but also, you know, being the one to respond to a broken toilet without having any knowledge of plumbing. But I could turn the water off, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But I also take my life experiences and try to take how I felt in certain situations and how can I translate that to others. And I'll give you an example. We've all had an experience where we've gone somewhere and we have been made to feel so welcome, right? Mm-hmm. And you remember that. You were like, gosh, that was such a nice thing, or that was so nice of them to do that. At the same time, coming from New Orleans, I had the experience of being an outsider, because really from Lafayette, if you're from New Orleans, it's like another country, right?
Yes, but, definitely. But
definitely having to break in, you know, and become included. I've also had the experience, and listen, this is not a one-way street, but I've had the experience of being harshly judged and harshly treated. And of course, I've also harshly judged and harshly treated, right? So, but because of those experiences, feeling like an outsider, being judged, being treated harshly, that kind of thing, I made some decisions, even to the extent that maybe I overdo them. But my commitment is that everyone, for example, in our building who walks in should be made to feel welcome. They should be made to feel valued. They should be treated with respect, and not because we're trying to get a sale or get a client or that, only because we are fellow human beings. Yesterday morning, I arrived here, it was storming. I arrived at the office. I come in early. That's my discipline. And there was a couple that was here for a clinic appointment, but well before the office opened, even an hour before, maybe a little bit more, but they I realized what had happened because as I pulled into the parking lot, there was a transportation van that left. And so they had been dropped off and were sitting under a covered area on a brick bench, but it was a patient and his wife. Mm-hmm. And it was pouring. They were covered, but golly. And so I knew they had a long time, and we have rules because of, you know, HIPAA and that kind of thing over at hospice. I'm sure everyone would understand that. But I asked them if they were okay. I offered to bring them up to sit in my office. They said no, they were okay, and they weren't getting wet. So fine, I walked up to my office. I went right back downstairs. I said, y'all come into the lobby, you know. Mm-hmm. And brought them up to the lobby, made sure they were fine and comfortable. I'll set my alarm every 10 minutes to go walk out and check on them. And they were absolutely fine. As a matter of fact, we kind of joked and I said, I know this has got to be a little bit more comfortable than that brick bench you were sitting on. And the gentleman who was the patient, you know, he just said, oh, yes, ma'am. You know, it was not their fault that they were there early. They had, you know, arranged for a ride, and listen, you're at the mercy of when that ride comes, you know, and, you know, it's the dignity of the person. Why would we have them sit outside in the rain? So it was an easy fix, but it's taking the time to notice, you know, and that leads me to a lesson that I have to tell you that I have learned, and it's the importance of presence, you know. Mm-hmm. We've talked in our family about how, you know, we've done more, you know, activities to help support different causes and organizations. And one of my brothers was involved in a big food drive in New Orleans. And I said, you know, it's interesting because it's easy to write a check for those types of things. But it's hard to love someone in our own family who's got some mental health issues. And I said, isn't it something? We're so willing to help. We'll give the shirt off of our back to help a stranger or support a cause. But it's sometimes difficult for us to love our sister. It's not easy to love the unlovable, but mm-hmm. it's easy to write a check. You see what I'm saying, Holly?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that. And, you know, I really appreciate having been benefactor of you, you know, always making people feel welcome. As many people may know, Beacon's first offices were actually of the Hospice of Acadiana building. And you were really instrumental in getting us there and just always making sure that we felt welcome and part of the hospice culture. And not really, not just you. I mean, really the whole culture of Hospice of Acadiana is like that. And so, you know, I really appreciate all the partnerships and friendships that I made while we were there. And I'm so glad that even though Beacon's not there, you know, anymore, that we're still friends and we're still partners.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Well, Mary, I really appreciate you being, a guest on the Helpful Yours podcast. We've got so many stories. You are a great storyteller. So I really appreciate you coming on today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I always love working with you. And like you said, our friendship, it's really a special, you have such a special place in my heart. I have so much admiration for all that you are doing and do for so many. Holly, I'm always talking about Beacon and the great work that you guys do. So thank you for that as well.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, you have a great day. Thank you.
Well, hi, Pauline, and welcome to the Helpful Yours podcast. I'm so glad that you're here today.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me. I'd love to have some conversation with you.
Yes, and I know that, you know, just you always have stories to tell, and, you know, you've been a nurse for a long time. I don't know if you're going to tell nursing stories or other stories. Either one is fine, but I'm really curious about your stories. So let's get started with you telling us about a time when you helped someone.
Oh, you know, there are so many stories I can tell you, but I'll share one of the recent stories within the hospital that I've been able to work with. I recently got a call from a facility in New Orleans, And it was someone from pastoral care and said, listen, I got your name. I wanted to see if you could help me. I said, well, what is going on? And he shared with me, he had an individual over there that was about 62 years old with extensive end-stage cancer, actually dying. But his family, which consisted of only his mother and father, was here in Lafayette. They were 87. The mom was 87. The dad was 92. And he wanted to be here so that he could die with his parents. You know, one of the things that are so hard, you know, for me, knowing that that's their only child and they would not be around for his end of life, I said, oh, look, I will promise you, I'm going to jump on this right now. So I made a few calls, talked to one of our inpatient hospice, made a call to the hospital that the individual was there, talked to them, found out exactly what was going on. I said, look, I got this call from your pastoral care. I really would like to try to help you. They were like, oh, great, because we didn't know how to do this. So we had the conversation. I spoke to the inpatient hospice, explained to them everything that needed to happen. I said, look, I said, you know, we have an 87-year-old mother and a 91-year-old father that wants to be with their son when he dies. I mean, immediately they just jumped on that. So we were able to get him here within 4 hours.
Wow.
It just everything worked. The mother and father were there to be able to with him that afternoon. He passed away the following day.
Oh, wow.
If it wouldn't have been for that communication of that pastoral care individual calling me, I would not have been able to help make that move. You know, and I just feel like, oh my God, it's such a hard thing to lose someone, but a mother and father that physically couldn't get to their son, their only child,
right,
and not be there when he passed on was just something, couldn't let go, got to pull all the strings, got to get some support here. So while, you know, it was a hard story for the family, we were truly blessed in being able to let them be there and let that son see his mother and father before he passed. That was his biggest wish. So for me, that was one of my greatest accomplishments of that week. You know, I do a lot of other things, but that really kind of touched my heart. It was like, I had to fight for this.
Yes.
You know, so it was great. It was a sad story, but it had a happy ending because I knew that mom and dad and that patient were going to be okay because they were able to be with each other at the end of life.
Yeah. And that's just, it's so important. You know, I lost my mom 3 years ago, and just being able to be there with her at the end was like really important to me. And I'm always be grateful that I had that chance to do that. And, you know, even more, I think this story that you're telling just really exemplifies you. And it's something that I aspire to as well, is that people know you as someone that can help. And so when they don't know what to do, they call you, and you may not know what to do either, but you know, oh, well, maybe if I call this person, they can help me figure it out. And, you know, look at what you did within 4 hours of somebody reaching out, because somebody had heard that Pauline Breaux can make it happen.
Well, I do try. And, you know, I've been very fortunate to have worked in the industry for a long period of time. And I think And whether they want to or not, if you know, they're going to find out about me, because if I see you, I'm going to introduce myself and what I do, because I'm always looking for what else can we provide to our patients and our families, you know, and even here at the hospital, I had a recent situation where I had some staff just stop me in the hall and say, hey, can you help this staff member? She's struggling. So I said, sure. So I went and met with her, and we were able to get some resources for her to be able to have a better quality in her life and help her through the trauma that she was in. So, you know, I'm blessed in that part. As you know, I talk a lot.
That's okay.
I'm not shy. And I'm always willing to help, you know, whatever I can. And I'm always looking for resources, anything I can get. And God just put me in a special place to be able to help this family. And I'm so blessed. I truly am.
Well, I just remember a time when you helped us at Beacon. We had a client that was in the jail that had suffered a stroke, and the jail did not know what to do. They did not want to release. This person was now wheelchair bound and was homeless before arriving at the jail. And just, they did not want this person to like be discharged back to the situation where he would, I mean, surely he would not survive. And so they called us, and we didn't know about how to get somebody into a nursing home from jail. So I called you, and you said, oh, we got to do a PASAR. I don't know what a PASAR is. We got to do this and that. And you know, I connected you with the jail, and it took a while, but we were able to get that person to a nursing home to take care of him.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah. And, you know, I did go to the jail. That was the first time for me. you know, it was like, okay. It was a different different area, but I was, you know, able to help that staff talk to the little inmate and look at, he needed some other resources, and shared with the staff that was there, not only do you need to do this, but we got to get him this and this. Mm-hmm. So it was a great experience for me, because I saw something I had not seen before. And I think they were very appreciative. And I know the little gentleman was very appreciative.
Oh, yes.
You know, yes. So, you know, but it was kind of strange, because I just had never been inside of the jail.
Well, that's, yes. And that's, most people have not, and that's okay. So let's switch topics now, and tell me about a time when someone helped you.
You know, I am so lucky. I've had so many people help me. But I will tell you a story about something as a young individual, you know, just out of school. And I was 19 years old, and it really impacted my life tremendously. I was a 19-year-old single mom raising a son, working at Walmart, actually. No, I'm sorry, Kmart. That was when we had Kmart. And I knew that as a mom, I needed to do something to get better, to be able to bring a better life to myself and to my child. And I decided, that I needed to go to school. So I enrolled at LSUE, got in, started, you know, first semester, said, I'm going to become a nurse. That's what I want to do. I really started wanting to do commercial art, and I did a year of that and said, I can't support my job that way. But I did have a second love, and that was nursing. So I got in at LSU and met a lot of wonderful people. And the first week of school, and I'm driving from here to Eunice, from Lafayette to Eunice, and I'm doing okay. I got an old Buick, but it's making it. It's getting me back and forth. And I meet two nurses in class, and they're from Lafayette. And we said, okay, we're great. We're going to carpool. So I was like, oh, great, great. So the first week we rotated first couple of weeks. They drove. And the third week, it was my turn. And the first day, I can remember this, we're actually taking that Crawley exit. My car just stops. And it was gone. I mean, there was nothing else left to it. And I just knew that, oh my God, what am I going to do? I no longer have transportation to be able to go to school. And I was just struggling. I was like, man, it was like, okay, how am I going to do this? I just knew I was going to have to drop out of school. Mm-hmm. So after that happened, actually one of the nurses, her husband came and met us, and he brought us to school, and he checked on my car, and he said, yeah, it's gone. So the nurses said, looked at me and said, well, you know what, Pauline, and they knew that I was struggling and I was, you know, trying to get an education. And they looked at me and they said, look, don't worry about transportation. We will pick you up and we will take you every day to school.
Wow.
And that's what they did for 2 years. They helped me get to school so that I could get my degree, my first degree, and be able to have a better life, not only for me, for my child, and for the people, you know, that I hope to help. They were very special people. If it would not have been for someone or these two special ladies to have said, hey, we'll help you, I would not have been able to go to school. I would not have been able to be where I am at today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, that was, I can't tell you how extremely helpful that was. You know, transportation, it was like, oh my goodness. And, you know, I knew I could come here in Lafayette, but I was trying to get through a 3-year program in 2.
Right.
To get on my feet quicker. So that was my options. And I was fortunate. I was blessed, actually great, that I was able to get in, because I was carrying at that time 21 hours a semester and I was working 40 hours a week.
Oh, Pauline.
You know, but I had that, you know, not to have to worry about the transportation. And it was great because we could study on the way and on the way to back. They helped me, you know, we'd ride together to get our assignments, you know, so it was a tough situation, but I was so blessed to have those individuals, and not only them, my parents, my grandmother that helped me, because at the time, childcare wasn't paid for by anything. And I did not know, I was 19 years old. I didn't know what was available out there.
Right.
So my grandmother was helping me pay some of the sitter, and I was working, and, you know, and I mean, the only time I had off was between the hours of when I got off of work at 11:30 at night to 5. I studied during that time, slept, and started all over.
Oh, wow.
You
that
know,
was, but it must have been tough times.
It was. It was a tough, but it was a very rewarding situation that I knew that there was a reason why everything came into being, that I needed to be a nurse. I wanted to be a nurse. I wanted to be out there to help other people. You know, and, you know, this is just one, I've just been such a blessed person to be able to have done this, because I can guarantee you, if it would not have been for them, I would not have been able to go to school.
Yeah. I'm thinking about, I just was talking to my staff about, it's called the 10-10-10 rule. And it's like, when you're making a decision, you think about, like, what's the impact in 10 minutes? What's the impact in 10 months? And then what's the impact in 10 years? Well, you know, I think you can, I mean, I think someone, you could see, like, someone making the decision to, you know, help give you a ride. Well, in 10 minutes, that just relieved some immediate stress for you. You know, it solved a problem. You know, we think, you know, 10 months or, you know, a couple of years later, you were able to get your degree. What a great impact that one decision had. And then not even 10 years later, but 42 years later of being a nurse, I mean, just the amount of impact that one decision had, you know, just thinking about all the people that you've helped because they helped you. It's astounding to me when I think about it.
And you know, I see a lot of young nurses and here at the hospital and talking to them and whatnot, or LPNs that are going back to school for RNs. And I share with them that, look, you know, look at what you really want. And if it's really what you want, it's worth fighting for. And if that means you're going to be a little bit less sleep, but you're going to accomplish, never give up.
Mm-hmm.
Never give up. And I really, you know, when my LPNs that are going back to school for RNs, I really try to help them to change their schedules, make recommendations. Okay, let's see how we can do this, you know, because I want them to succeed, because it's just going to be such a phenomenal thing for them to be able to meet the goals and the career that they really want and how they're going to touch our patients in the future. So, you know, it's kind of like paying back, because it was through those two nurses I was able to get some help. And now I'm trying to help my staff get a betterment, even my nursing assistants. Mm-hmm. I had one of the nurse aides, and she, you know, I kind of encouraged her. She'd been with me a while. And she's presently at school. She's in college. And she was sharing with me that her and her son are both seniors at UL.
Aww.
Getting a degree. I love that. You know, and she said, you know, Pauline, if you wouldn't have pushed me or said, hey, I'll help you, and you changed my schedule to where I could work on the weekends so I could go to school, I would have never been able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think it's, you know, you having lived through that experience just gives you just such an increased degree of empathy and understanding. You know, a lot of people might sympathize with someone's situation and try to, you know, and still try to adjust and make changes. But you having lived through that, you know, just, I think that just, you can definitely see your heart in the work that you do, and, you know, helping your staff to meet their goals in life.
You know, and I tell you, you know, I've touched a lot of people, and some people, and I am the worst. I will tell you, I am the worst for names. I'll recognize your face, but I may not recognize your name. But I have had many of the staff come back, and they never forget everything that they've learned with me. You know, I take a lot of pride in that, in the fact that, hey, Pauline, you know, you taught me this, or you taught me that, or you helped me here. It's like, okay, maybe that is my footprint for life, that I need to be able to help and continue doing that. And I love it. I truly do. When you can see a smile for someone you can actually see the stress just kind of relieve from their face when they have a solution.
Yes.
You know, it's wonderful to see.
It is. It is. And, you know, as we're about to close out with this conversation, I'm struck that when we're recording this, this is National Nurses Week. So, Pauline, you know, thank you for being like such an excellent nurse, and the contributions you've made to our community. And, you know, I just think, you know, nursing, I mean, the heart of nursing is helping. I love that we're kind of, while this will actually be published in a couple of weeks, we are recording this during National Nurses Week.
Well, thank you so much. It's, you know, like I said, I truly enjoy what I do as a nurse, but mostly as a person, as an individual. You know, nursing is not just about the clinical. It's about the people. it's about the people you care for and making sure that it's not just, you know, putting a Band-Aid on something. It's more about meeting them where they're at.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Well, Pauline, thank you so much for being on Helpfully Yours and sharing your stories. And I really do appreciate all the work that you do for Beacon and for Our Lady of Lourdes Regional Medical Center and just for the community of Acadiana.
Well, you're quite welcome.
This has been an Atomic K production. Recording was done in Lafayette, Louisiana by Holly Howitt with editing and technical assistance from Spencer Howitt. Check out our website at helpfully-yours.alitu.com to listen to all episodes and as well as show notes. To make sure you don't miss an episode, make sure to subscribe to the Helpfully Yours podcast. Music is from Scenic World's Dissolving Art album. The Helpfully Yours podcast supports the mission of Beacon Community Connections. Learn more at beaconconnections.org.